Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. I'm your host for this evening, Henrietta Bird, along with Jill in Atlanta. How are you tonight, Jill?
Good, Henrietta. How are you?
I'm great, great. A beautiful day here in Chicago. We're still having a wonderful, wonderful summer. So we had 80 degree weather today, which is not hot and, you know, just real comfortable. How is it in Atlanta?
It's actually pretty nice out. It wasn't cold and rainy as it was last week. So we had a pretty good day today. It's pretty warm.
Well, tonight our show is based on two major topics that are very dear to the International Black Summit. One topic is the declaration of the International Black Summit, and the major topic today, of course, is September 11th. 2001, September 11th. Tonight we'd like to reflect on things that have occurred since September 11th, and how they've unfolded inside of the Declaration of the International Black Summit. You know, we talk about the Declaration all the time, and the reason that we do is because that's what we stand for as members of the summit body, the different things that are in that declaration. So tonight we're going to really, really comb through that declaration to get clear about how things have evolved and were unfolded since September 11th. So please share with us your information, your feelings, your challenges, the blessings, the different feelings that you have about the declaration, and we will help facilitate the declaration for you. So Jill's going to state it for us this evening. So take a real close listen and see where you are in the declaration of the International Black Summit. Jill.
Thank you, Henrietta. Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expansion of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, making wellness in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. Atlanta, Georgia, September 11th, 2011. Moment of silence, please. Thank you. Back to you, Henrietta.
Thank you, Jill. So we declare ourselves and our communities whole and complete. And how do we say that on a day like today, or on a day like today 10 years ago? How does whole and complete look when you have planes crashing into buildings intentionally? You know, when you have people who appear to give up their lives, or are people who, quote unquote, transition or die, if you will, because it appears that someone else decided that's what they wanted to do. We have to take a really good look at this and what it means inside our declaration when we say we're whole and complete. You know, just what does that mean? What does it mean when we say we stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children? Just what does that mean? When things occur, seeming tragedy occurs, something automatically occurs in the community. And that something is generated by that consciousness that's in the community. And so what we'd like for you to share this evening is, what was the consciousness like in your community on September 11th? You know, you may have been at work. Well, I guess most people were at work, unless they worked different shifts or whatever. But where were you? How were you affected by it? What was your initial reaction? And then think further than that. You know, think about what occurred afterwards. How were you affected afterwards? Okay? So those are just some of the questions we're going to toss around tonight. But I'd like to check in now to see if Jerry is on the line.
Yes, I am.
All righty. So as we do every week, we always connect our topics and our shows to one of the Kwanzaa principles. And Jerry, could you do that for us, please?
Hey, good evening to the team and everybody else out there. The name of the Kwanzaa principle that I picked is very appropriate for tonight. Is Nia, in parentheses, means purpose. To make our collective vocation the development of our communities in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. And also I have I want to read another one. So another one is Kumba, in creativity, to do a way as much as we can, in the way we can, in order to leave our communities more beautiful and beneficial than we inherited. Something to think about. Back at you, Henry.
Okay. So we have two principles tonight. Nia, and the second one I did not hear.
Kaumba.
Kaumba, okay. Kaumba. Thank you. Okay, and so those are the two Kwanzaa principles that we'll, you know, that we think about throughout the evening as we, you know, as we work through this September 11th topic and how we have unfolded inside that declaration as it pertains to September 11th, 2001. So let's start first let me find out if there are any callers on the line, and we'll check in to see if anyone would like to share.
Okay, thanks, Henrietta. I do want to remind everyone, if you have a comment, please press 1, and I will get you on the air. We have 404-281. You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing? This is Edward here from Atlanta.
Hi, Ed.
Hi, Ed.
Hey, somebody's moving around a lot of papers in the background. Give a lot of feedback. I don't know who's doing that, but just FYI. For me, I was at work on that day, and I was just up there that weekend. On that Saturday night, my brother, they had a boat ride at the Hudson where you catch off the pier off of, you know, off of the, what's that, 34? Some, it's down in that area. In other words, it's down, it's right in that area where you can catch the boat ride. So, number one, I was just up there, that being one. Secondly, my grandfather, he ended up dying like Thursday of that week, because even though he wasn't feeling well, he didn't want to go to the hospital because he was worried about the other folks, you know, who needed more help, you know, than him. And he ended up dying that actual Thursday. So those two things, you know, were for me, you know, and then, again, because I have a brother who's up there as well, again, traveling through Manhattan, you know, coming up through 40th Street. That's his stop. I have another cousin who works down off of Wall Street. So, you know, I had like a lot of, you know, my family, I had to kind of consider it. And I think that's what was kind of going through my mind. And I tell you, you could hear a pin drop in the room. It got so quiet, you know, from the, we have a TV in the general commons area or like the lunch area. So everyone was very quiet, you know, had the comments going on. So that's what we all were kind of trusted to.
Thanks, Ed. Let me ask you a question. Your grandfather's transition, it took place after September 11th or before? The Thursday after or the Thursday before?
Correct, it was Thursday after. It was in that same week. But he wasn't feeling well. But he didn't want to go to the hospital because of, you know, they had other things kind of going on. And he just kind of said he would wait, kind of deal.
And he was in New York?
Correct.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. And thank you. Thank you for sharing that that with us. And so even though you're in Atlanta, you're all of this is happening in your life in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's you know, those are the kinds of things that occur for us that we never forget, you know, and we have we kind of have questions about. Did you listen to the declaration when Jill was reading it? Was there anything that stuck out in that declaration?
I guess just in relation to 911, I really, I don't know. I guess nothing that I can kind of, I guess just to pinpoint. But again, it's just about, I guess, if anything, would probably be this nurturing relationship. I mean, if anything, would maybe stand out or be sure, you know, that, you know, as people are alive, you know, you be mindful how you handle folks. Be mindful how you deal with them, you know, because I got some things I'm kind of dealing with that now, you know, with some folks that I need to have some conversation around. You know, and that'd be pretty, but we just need to have them.
Right.
And again, it's about, hey, let's everybody be real and let's be honest. And in order for us to be able to have a difference, we have to be honest with one another.
Yeah, and I get that, establishing nurturing relationships. And nurturing relationships, you know, sometimes that means having those uncomfortable conversations so that the relationship can maintain itself and not, you know, and not be, you know, be fake. You know, that's just the word for it, just not be fake. So, and when we establish nurturing relationships, you know, and you talked about several relationships that you have in New York, you know, and as you establish those relationships, one of the things that we're talking about tonight is how things that occur like that have you be the way you are today. Like now you're intentional about having these conversations, you know, with whoever you need to have the conversation with, which is really great because that allows the relationship to be nurtured even more. It is uncomfortable, you know, but it will allow it itself to calm down. You know, I was just in a conversation maybe 3 days ago with a person, and when we first met, we had a situation, and I can remember being very hesitant about saying what I felt I needed to say. And it took me a couple of days, you know, actually it took me about a week to say it, but once I said it, it kind of freed me. What occurred was it freed me, but it put it on the other person, like the information, they had to sit with it, you know. And so after another week, you know, they called me back, and then we sat down, and we both were able to talk about it. And we are the best of friends now. You know, we have a good working relationship, you know. And it was all because we just did the conversation. So I acknowledge you for being intentional about standing in establishing nurturing relationships. You know, the other thing that comes up for me is altering the conversation of who we are, you know, in the media, or who we are, period, but just altering the conversation. Because oftentimes, you know, we are people who will back off and we don't want to make waves, so we don't say anything. And then things get out of hand. So, you know, when we alter the conversation of who we are, that we are people who can sit down and have and communicate with each other at a level so that we can evolve, we alter the conversation. And I like that. So I, you know, that comes up as well. And along with the principle that Jerry brought up, the Nia, you know, like purpose, like the purpose is to communicate at a level where two parties can understand each other and be with each other, you know, no matter what their seeming differences might be. So, well, thank you so much, Ed, for your share.
Okay, Henrietta, I believe this is Glenn. Glenn 347776. Is that you, Glenn?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Hi.
Hey, Glenn.
How's it going?
Good, good.
Good.
Well, where was I? 9/11. 9/11, I was in the West Coast. I was actually still in bed. Somebody called, and I was just on vacation. I was lounging. Somebody called and said, turn on the TV. Something's happening in New York. And watch the second plane go into the towers. And somebody else said, we're under attack. And so my first reaction was, wow, you know what? We're under attack. Like we, you know, United States, we ain't never been attacked on our, you know, in our country, in our home. And so the thing that I got present to was being present to what was going on around me, and what had occurred to me was that we had gotten sucker punched. Like we didn't even see it coming, and somebody just out of the blue swung on us, and we wasn't prepared, we wasn't even looking for it, and we got sucker punched. So it's like, man, you know, so who do I need to be about my listening and about my surroundings, that I have a whole nother level of consciousness, something like that wouldn't even happen. So that's what was in my face present. And then, so then when I looked at the declaration and presence that conversation in the declaration, if we listen for and grant being the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. And so one of the things that I got to see and get to be with is that I helped cause that to happen by being unconscious. And so unpredictable results aren't necessarily only good things. Unpredictable results also can be bad things. And so who am I and what am I responsible for being conscious and consciously living in my community, my space, my world, my country? You know, so what I found is a wake call for me to take a look at my life and where was I not awake? Where was I not being conscious? Where was I vulnerable now to suck upon? So that's what I saw.
That's being with what is. That's really being with it. You know, with what is, and being responsible, you know, being responsible by taking it on yourself. You know, that's interesting. Do we have any other callers, Jill?
No, I just want to remind everyone, if you would like to share, please press 1, and I will put you on the air. I would like to share, Henrietta, that I was working, and I was in the space of empowering our youth, and they were actually wanting to leave my counseling session. So there's some feedback. If some people need to put their phone on mute, I greatly appreciate that. But I was in the space of empowering our youth at a detention center, and they wanted to rush and watch TV, so they turned the TV on. And when the TV was on, it shows the second plane hitting the towers. And I thought it was a movie. So I saw the plane, and I just stopped. And I said, what are they watching? And I just walked out of the room and went into another, and went to my office. And as far as what Glenn was saying, as far as being aware and conscious of our surroundings, I do remember feeling odd, like wasn't just looking at the TV and saying, why are they watching that movie? I felt like there was something wrong, but it was, I couldn't relate to it. There was no way that this could actually happen and the plane could hit the Twin Towers. So the reality check was not checking into my mindset at the time. So afterwards, though, when I found out what was going on, of course, that's when it all just kind of hit me and came to a conclusion as what was happening. But I was in the space of empowering our youth, in the space of providing human services. But after the crash, we did have some students or some kids that were in the detention center, and they had family members in New York. So it shifted to empowering wellness of being really in our bodies as far as our mental health, because there was a lot of crying and a lot of calling that needed to take place. So it was, everything in the declaration definitely showed up for me. And we do have another caller, Henrietta, if I could take this call.
Okay.
We have 404-643, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, this is Alicia.
Hi, Alicia.
Can you hear me? I think I'm having some feedback problems.
Okay.
I was just going to share where I was when everything took place. I was a technician working for AT&T, and I walked into the break room, and I saw my our union president sitting there watching TV. And I said, "Hey, Baba, what's going on?" She said, "Girl, a plane just flew into one of the Twin Towers." And I said, "Is this a joke?" You know, because this just couldn't be real. You know, I said, "Is this a joke?" She said, "No, this is not a joke." And so I began to sit there, and, you know, we watched the other plane go into the tower, and I just was like, "Oh, my God." And, you know, immediately I thought, you know, my family in New York, you know, what is going on? Are they okay? You know, and so then I said, "Okay, you just need to pray. That's the first thing you need to do. Just pray, you know. I'm going to go ahead and make the call." So I called my aunt, and she was very brief. She said, "We're okay, but this is horrible. I've never seen anything like this before." And we got disconnected, and I didn't hear from her for about 4 days. And then she finally called and said that they were okay, and then she started giving me the horror stories. But how it impacted my life was probably about 4 months after that, I was given an option to go ahead and take a package. My company had started laying off people, and it made me think about things and just that, you know, nothing in life is promised. So, you know, if you have another option, if you know, if there's something else you want to do, you know, you might want to go ahead and take this opportunity while the company's offering you this lump sum and, you know, benefits for, you know, a year and all this stuff. So it made me just reevaluate my whole life, that thing. And that's my story.
Were you able to hear the declaration?
Yes, I think I missed the first part of it, but I did hear some of it, yes.
Was there anything that stood out with you that you remember?
I remember her saying the part about that we are all responsible for generating community, and it just made me think about, yes, how a long time ago, you know, how everybody say it takes a community to raise children. And, you know, that still applies now. I know that things have changed dramatically from when I was a child, but it just made me think about that. And, yes, we are all responsible for each other ultimately. And if we don't take care of each other, you know, who will?
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you remember how long it took you to start thinking about taking the early buyout, how soon that occurred after September 11th?
It was about 3 months after that happened. But I think that I think I may have made another decision, because a lot of people are afraid to just step out on faith when it comes to just, you know, starting your own business. Well, the thing is, I had already started another business on the side, my partner and I, and we were doing very well at the time. So I just said, "Hey, you only live once. I'm going to go ahead and step out on faith." You know, I had that lump sum of money, and, you know, I had all my resources in place. So it just seemed that God just, you know, put everything in place for us to move forward with our own thing. And then it made me realize you don't have to sit and, you know, make somebody else money. You can do this for yourself on your own schedule. So I think that's how I was affected personally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are things that occur. You know, sometimes we don't hear about those kinds of things, so I really appreciate, you know, you sharing that. And how's your business going?
You know what, we're like everybody else having, you know, it's not as good as it was because of the recession and all, but, you know, I'm not complaining because, you know, it could be worse. But everything, all is well. All is well at the moment.
Right, and just remember that spark that you had that made you step out there, just hold on to that, and it'll come, you know, it'll come back around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just hold on to that. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You are so welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Alicia. We do have another call. We have 212-281. You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening, everyone. My name is Eula Young. How are you?
Hi, Eula Young.
Good, how are you?
Great.
I'm doing well. I'm blessed. My story is that my husband worked three blocks from the World Trade Center. And my brother-in-law, which is my husband's brother, worked a few blocks from the Pentagon. So we had the traumatic shock of waiting to hear from both of them to see if they were okay, because the phone lines went down in New York for a while, and no one could get through on cell phones or on landlines, and it was very traumatic trying to find out if these people were okay.
Sure. And what did you do? How did you make it through that time of waiting?
Well, the first thing I did, I was in denial, because when I had the television on, my husband left for work. He took our daughter at the time, she just turned one, to child care, and I had taken the day off. So I had running around to do, and it was primary day, so I was going to go vote, run my errands, and do a lot of things. And when I first heard the break-in report and I saw the hole and they said it might be a small plane, I dismissed it immediately, because I said, how in this beautiful clear day could a plane not see that tall building? And I left for my errands. And walking down the street in Harlem, it was this eerie silence. There was no traffic on the major roads, and that was very eerie. And I knew immediately after walking a few blocks that something was very wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And people were, some gentlemen were on the corners, and they're talking about we're at war now. We have to get these people back for doing this to us. And I didn't equate what they were saying to what happened at the World Trade Center, but when I went to the school and found out that they had shut down the primaries, I decided to come right back home and try to reach my husband because my cell phone wasn't working. And in my block that I live in is a precinct, and they had shut down the block. You could not get into your own block unless you had ID proving that you lived on that block. So that was one of the most disturbing things, that all this was going on, and I had to reach people and find out what was going on, and the phone lines were down. So that in itself, waiting and waiting until it finally got through to my mother-in-law to see if she heard anything, and that's when she told me that her oldest son was working near the Pentagon, and they were just hit. So when I turned on the TV, they showed how the first tower went down and then the second tower went down. And that's when I wanted to share panic, because I knew my husband was in that area.
So were you on the line when you heard the declaration?
Yes.
And what part of the declaration did you see yourself in at the time?
Well, I knew that I had to change my priorities. I prayed that day. I prayed like I don't think I ever prayed in my life before. And I knew that I had to renew my strength and my faith in God. And I also knew that there were other things out there that I needed to do for myself and for my family that I wasn't doing at the time. And after what happened in 9/11, thank God my husband and my brother-in-law were safe. We started a business after that. My husband lost his job because of what happened down there in that area. A lot of businesses closed and never opened up again. So he lost his employment. And we decided to start our own business.
It's amazing how out of a lot of conversations, not only on the radio show, but just outside of the radio show, people just became creative and actually did what they wanted to do. They were being their vision. We talk about that as far as in the summit. about being in your vision. And so it's great that out of something so traumatic, people are actually finding themselves actually in their vision and doing the work that that the universe wanted them to do. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it. Oh, no problem, no problem. We have another caller, 347-841. You're live on the air.
Yes, good evening. This is Ray. Hello, Jill. Henrietta.
Hi, Ray.
Jerry,
how are you?
Glenn. Okay. And Ed, is he still on the air?
I believe
you know,
he is.
Yes,
yep.
Ed.
There he is.
Yeah, I just want to say that in reference to what you're going through with the determination that your family had, you know, to actually deny himself hospitalization to be there to help. That is part of the declaration that he fulfilled. So his transformation, once he fulfilled that, was complete. So no matter how upset or painful it might be and you miss him, just know that his transformation was complete, and it was a loving transformation. He gave of himself. You know, it's like a redemption. He gave of himself. I sacrificed himself. And you lost him because he sacrificed himself. He might have still been alive today, but he refused to let these people suffer. So the thing is that he died the way he wanted to. And I wouldn't say die. He transformed into, you know, he's alive somewhere else in another spirit realm, you know, positively. So this is how you want to remember him, okay? I know this is not a good time for you, but the thing is he did what he wanted to do. And he would not like it if you were really upset and turning yourself inside out because he chose what he chose to do for the benefit of his brothers and sisters, you know. So I hope I'm not out of line for saying that. But I've lost family members, too, so I just wanted to condone that, convey that to you.
Oh, you know, no, you're good. I got where you're coming from. I know where your heart is at, so you're good.
But
you're
now,
good.
Yes, okay. So, like I said, I apologize if I'm out of line. I don't think I am.
But you
know, okay. All right, now, as far as my experience, I was supposed to be in. I was a security officer going back and forth to all the 7 security buildings and whatnot, security tourists and whatnot, directing people to trains and whatnot. I had an interview at Century 21 that day. I decided not to go in. I don't know why, but I decided not to go in. It's like I was tired, and it's like something told me not to go in, you know, because it's like I'm out there. I experienced it, you know, I was in charge of, you know, controlling of vehicle accidents and reporting them into the base and whatnot. So I was in tune with a lot of tourists and whatnot. But the thing is, for some reason, I decided not to go in. Little did I know that this was going to happen until I, you know, I had my radio intents and wins, and I hear this, and I get up, and I'm turning on the TV. And I'm like, I was supposed to be in there, and at lunchtime, I was supposed to go for another interview at Century 21, you know. And the thing is that when I heard that, at that time, I was with a police officer. And he got up, he was called in, and he says, I'm going to go out, and I'm going to kill every Arab that I see. I'm like, listen, you don't want to do that. I said, because not everybody who are Arabs are terrorists. So the thing is that what I found out was that manifesting the wellness and being, that part of that declaration of your body came into play because hate only breaks your body down. You just can't go out and go out against everyone. Now, for some reason, I wasn't in there. But the other thing is that there was a reason why I did not go in. I don't know to this day, but I'm grateful, you know, and I'm grateful for stopping him because, I mean, the man had a gun. He's a police officer now. And it's like, you can't go in like that, you know, because a lot of our brothers and sisters out there are Arabs, and you can't blame the whole Arab race for what was going on. You know, and I said, because that's unfair. Just like you can't blame the whole black race what's going on in Los Angeles or, you know, Bedford-Stuyvesant, for that matter. I said, you are the officer of the law. You're supposed to uphold the law. You're supposed to take charge, not fit into the mob scene. So it was very tumultuous for me, but it was a learning experience, and it just made me grow. Because mm-hmm. the thing is that when you're dealing with people day in and day out, and as an officer and as a security officer, at that time I was, it's just that you begin to develop a mentality against certain races. So for that declaration to make sense to me and for me to manifest the wellness of the body and the spirit, that means you cannot hate, because hate breaks down the body and the spirit. You know, you cannot think. You cannot, nothing comes out of it. You understand? So that is what the declaration meant to me, and it came into play after I heard of the IBS like 2 or 3 years ago. Ironic. Mm-hmm. You know. So mm-hmm. that's what I'm going to say.
Very good. Thank you, Ray. We do have another caller, 347. Thanks for sharing that, Ray. We really appreciate you. I'm one of our consistent listeners. 347-776, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, this is Glendon. You know, one of the things I wanted to share that God is good, for God is good. I was in California, and I'm actually so glad that I was, because the thing that I got was that if I was in New York, I'd have been down there the next day trying to save people and rescue people and all that. And I know that I would inhale all of those toxins from the burning and from the flame and so as you remember, there's a no-fly zone for 3 or 4 days. So I was stuck in California until maybe that Tuesday. And when I got back that Tuesday, the security was so tight that they told you not even to bother to go down there. And so I didn't. But had it not been for that, I know that I would have been there the next day and would have inhaled and had some of the respiratory issues that some of the firemen and the other rescue people have now. And just to let you know, now I live by the airport, and it's, I don't even know how many miles away it is, but we could see and smell the smoke, Queens. So if you could smell it all the way in Queens, the intensity of it, for the people that were right there on site. So I just wanted to share that being in California while it occurred, I believe, prolonged and saved my life from the respiratory ailments. Back to you, Henrietta.
Thanks, Glenn. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and we are remembering September 11th, 2001, and we're on with Glenn, Jerry, Jill, and myself, along with our wonderful listeners, Ray, Ed. I missed the other two names who called in, but thank you so much for sharing with us. We're talking about the declaration of the International Black Summit and how it holds us, you know, how it gives us, it kind of grounds us, and it gives us something to live inside of. And when things like 9/11 occur, you know, or like Glenn shared, even during those happy times, you know, there are times where you have to stand in that declaration and see where you are around it. When we first started this call this evening, I could not remember where I was, and I still can't remember where I was when it happened. And I realized I have blacked it out. I've blocked it. You know, I've been trying to pull it up, and every time somebody shared, I was able to get bits and pieces of it. I do remember being present to racism and differences My daughter at that time was in seventh grade, but she went to seventh grade in a high school. And when it occurred and I heard about it, I don't remember where I was, but I remember going to the school because they were bused. And they were, you know, I remember getting the, you know, the messages that they were either going to let schools out or the, you know, there were certain things that the city was doing that they were closing down because they started closing down all the federal buildings and everything in all the major cities. And I'm in Chicago. And when I went to pick up my daughter, she was standing outside of the classroom. And I'm trying to figure out why she's outside the classroom. And when her teacher, who was frantic when he heard the news, he runs in the classroom and says whatever he says to the children, and my daughter started laughing. And which is what she does when she's, you know, when things are, you know, like too much for your brain. And so so when I asked her why she was standing outside, you know, she said, the teacher put her out. And she tried to explain why, you know, she said, because I was laughing. Well, you know, and we went through that whole thing. But anyway, her teacher was a white male person, and Mediterranean, and he was, you know, when I asked him about it, he was just screaming and frantic, you know. And so when I told him, I said, you know, you might want to calm down a little bit, or you might need to separate yourself from the children because you're making the children crazy. You know, and so he stopped, and I pulled him to the side, and I explained to him, sometimes, you know, if you've done any study of the brain, when something is too much for the brain to handle, you laugh. And children do that often. And so that kind of snapped him back. And he apologized, you know, for putting her out of the room. And then he apologized to the class. I also remember her taking her to her dance class the next day. And in her dance school, there was one white family in the school. And the father would always bring the daughter because they lived far away in the suburbs. So he'd always bring her and he'd stay. And he was like the gentleman that Ray talked about. He said, if I was young enough and the military would take me, I would re-enlist and I would go over there and I would stay until I found them. And so that started a whole uproar in the dance school, you know, and it started, it started the conversation, and the conversation, you know, was about how we created, how we create things, and what about our responsibility. So I just remember that debate that the parents were having at the dance school. I still can't remember where I was at the time, but I remember afterwards in Chicago, because we have a very large Arab community in Chicago, and it was just really, really interesting for that community. Just really, really interesting, the things that occurred for them right after that. But when I look at the declaration, it's about a couple, you know, really a couple of things, our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent. It was just, there was nothing in the news about African people or people of African descent for the next couple of weeks. Even, you know, and we're always the headline, but it altered the conversation. I mean, and it altered it instantly. And the conversation went to another nationality, you know. And so I was really present to that as well. Are there any other callers, Jill?
Let's see. We have 347-325. You're live on the air. Go ahead.
This is me, Jerry.
Hi. How are you, Jerry?
Hey, what's going on? I want to give out the number. Get a number to the hospital. Now be doing that. We'll be having our hospital from 9 o'clock to 9:30. So the ones who are listening right now, can you take down the number? And we want you to join us in the oxygen room too. And that number is 218-862-6420. And there's a PIN number after that. And that number is 797-4834#. I would say again when I after my share, and also I'm gonna have my own commentary towards the end of the show. Well, my share is this: that when I was living at back in when it happened, it was on my oldest brother's birthday. Matter of fact, and it was so funny. Me and was talking. And he said, yeah, because he was getting ready. He said, y'all, I should go on my birthday. I should go to Twin Towers. And me and him, he said, well, I'm gonna come scoop you up. We're gonna like, you know, do a tour. And what happened was, I called him because he was on his way to New York. I'm leaving from Virginia at 5 o'clock, so I'll come pick you up. We can go. I said, yeah, bet, no problem, no problem. And some tell me to call him. So I call him, and he said, well, he said, when I got to Brooklyn, he said, I'm at mommy's house. Do you know what happened? I said, yeah, I'm looking at it. So he said, well, I'm going to stay here because, you know, everything is blocked off. Like he said, the whole downtown Brooklyn was blocked off. He said, there's no way he can go. So, see, he went to my mother's house, and we was talking, and he said, do you see people is were jumping out the window? That was the first town. I said, yeah, you see it? And it was crazy because his friend was supposed to meet up with us, and he just left. He just got on the train, and then they told him, "Oh, you got to get off here because everything blocked off." And so he just, like I said, he just left, and he said it was crazy because how downtown Brooklyn is, when you go like towards the Brooklyn Bridge, you can actually see the Twin Towers. So he was seeing people was running from the Brooklyn Bridge with all piles of stuff on them, and the only thing he could see, he would just rap, so he called my brother, let him know, he called my mother, he's fine, everything. But the one thing that really struck me, I went to the roof with this brother, he no longer, he in transition now. His name is King, cool brother named King. We actually see the twin, people was jumping. Because you go on the, like, we was 24 floors when you go on the roof. We could see the whole Manhattan, the skyscrapers. We actually seen people jumping, and plus the second tower was tumbling down. We actually see it in our own eyes. And all of we just look at each other and say, oh, no. And we actually see people was jumping, and we was like, it is. I said, man, there's something that we can do, and there's nothing we can do because there was conflict. I said, nobody is not allowed to go, period. Wherever you at, just stay. And when I look at the decoration, I look at the decoration We listen for grant being. We listen for and grant being to the possibility of creating unpredictable results. And to me, that day was very unpredictable. We don't even know what really hit us at the time. And it goes back right now that there are certain things on the TV. I can't say certain stuff on TV. I can't see it because it reminds me when I actually seen with my brother King that tower, someone got a second tower. And that's all I have to say. Back at you.
Yeah. Thanks, Jerry. Thanks very much. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and we are remembering where we were on September 11, 2001, and how the declaration of the International Black Summit has held us up, or where, you know, like what part of the declaration we've actually worked inside of since that day. You know, I thank everybody for the shares tonight. It's really, really interesting, you know, the things that have come up for me. I actually am triggered. So I'm being with that trigger. I'm noticing, you know, I'm just noticing some things that occur. I notice some things that I'm present to, some things that I thought were gone, and they're not. So as we continue the conversation in the oxygen room shortly, and when Jerry said 9 o'clock, that's Eastern time. It's 8 o'clock Central time. So if you're in the Central time zone, it's immediately following this call. Wherever you are, it's immediately following this call. And this call will be finished in a couple of minutes. So we thank God for each and every individual that had anything to do with September 11, 2001. We are thankful for the volunteers and the people, just everybody, you know, who chipped in. We're thankful for the people who are still working through, you know, and we are reaching out to those people as well and asking them to give us a call. And, you know, and we're here to provide assistance for whoever it is. And if you know anybody who might be able to utilize the assistance of the declaration, share it with them and ask them to call the talk show. We are always here every Sunday, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Along with, you know, go to blacksummit.org and look at the website. Okay? Jerry's going to close us out tonight, and then we're going to move into the oxygen room. And so, Jerry.
The room is 218-862-6420. 10 number is 7974834#. I'll make it nice and quick. What happened September 11th, 2001 was very tragic. And I know that us as a people, especially in, we part of God's family, we have to learn to love ourselves and treat ourselves with respect and understand that under God's divine purpose, we have the right to live and live in harmony with each other. Do not let September 11th take advantage of us. Let's conquer it and understand there's always another day to live and to love your family and to cherish our community. And at that, on behalf of this Black Summit, we love you. I'll be hosting the oxygen room. And let's keep this conversation going. God bless you. Good night.
Thank you, Jerry. Good night.
Have a wonderful week, everybody.
Good night. Peace and blessings.